So welcome back, hour four of the Halloween Marathon, Narsland Action. Thank you very much. Welcome back, everyone, to the fourth of 5 hours of our Halloween Marathon. And as we promised in the fourth hour, we're going to have International Megan's Law with two distinguished guests. And we have one who needs very little introduction that almost everyone knows is attorney Janice Bellucci from California, who is the, I'll lose track of her current title, but the Alliance for Constitutional Sexual Offense Laws is a organization which she is, what are you, executive director, Janice?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Janice, thank you for joining us. And you've been a long time since we've had you here, and we've got a lot of noise. We need to identify where it's coming from so we can suppress that mic. And we've got Paul Rigney. Paul, Andy, do you see where that's coming from? Because we need to turn it off. Paul Rigney's with the Registered Travel Advisory Group, and Paul has been with us many times before. Welcome to Paul and welcome to Janice. And Janice, I would appreciate if I could do a little housekeeping and do one answer from the call that we just carried over, if I can get a quick answer for that person. So the housekeeping is that we're gonna have the prizes drawn, and there's going to be one drawn in this hour and one drawn in the next hour. Anyone who has not entered needs to text to the number which Andy's going to give you, because I will mess it up. So, Andy, what number do they text?
They are going to text to 747-227-4477.
And
that's,
you will
747-227-4477. Lots of sevens, lots of twos, lots of fours.
And you will say prize in your text, and Andy will text you a contestant number, which the computer generates. And sometime this hour, I'm going to ask Andy to tell that computer to draw a contestant number. And the first hour is going to be for registration to NARSL's 2019 conference, which that could have up to a $200 value. We haven't exactly priced it yet, but whatever that's going to be, it'll be a free registration. So, King, you remember the answer of the caller about the, is there a way we can deal with that in a fairly concise answer and then before we get into International Megan's Law, or should we hold it?
But I remember the lady speaking about Georgia and about the sheriff doubling down after there was a complaint and then ended up on the national news. But if there was a question in there, I'm not clear what it was.
It was not. It was the previous one who was talking about the monitoring.
And I can't hear anyone just now.
Can't hear anybody, Andy. Like, then we'll reserve that question for your hour, King. It will go on. Paul, Rigney, Janice. Everybody wants to hear about International Megan's Law, and I don't really know where to start, because it could be a program to itself.
Now I hear you.
We only have
now I hear you. Can you hear me?
I was asking.
I'm bouncing in and out.
if you wanted to try to answer that question about internet restrictions.
So I don't know what her question was.
Well, then we'll bring her back.
But
up.
But I did hear her speak.
We'll bring her back up in your hour. And we'll go ahead and go over their National Megan's Law. So, Janice, a very warm welcome to you. It's been a long time. We've missed you.
Well, thank you, Larry. It has been a while. And I guess I can just lead off the discussion saying there's a lot of uncertainty about International Megan's Law and how it's being implemented today. And I hope everybody remembers that we filed two lawsuits trying to stop its implementation, and unfortunately, both were unsuccessful. The first one was focused on the merits of the substance of the law, and the second one on the procedure. But, you know, folks, it is what it is. It was an uphill battle for sure. And so where we are today is that we have a law, federal law, that says certain things, and I believe that the language is quite vague and ambiguous. So actually, the three things I'd bring up, one is whether or not there's a 21-day notice requirement. Two is the idea about Angel Watch Center and the Angel Watch Center sending messages to other countries telling them that you're coming and how you're being described. And three is the passports and whether or not a unique identifier gets added to your passport. So I know that there was some concern recently about a registrant in Florida, and I do want to address that because I now know the facts of the situation and think that if I share those facts that maybe people can feel calmer about it. So the facts are that gentleman, his passport was taken from him at an airport. This is the only situation, the only case we know when that has happened. And the reason that it happened was that he attempted to make two international trips pretty close in time. So in looking through the paperwork and the visa and everything, he attempted to go to country A and was unsuccessful. They would not let him enter, and so he was returned to the U.S. without entering that country. And then when he came back, I believe he waited about 10 days. He told his local law enforcement, even though it was less than 21 days, he told them about his second trip, and they said that was fine, and he tried the second trip. But what happened is that the federal government generally, or the State Department specifically, sent him a letter, had created a letter and mailed it to him telling him that his passport had been revoked. But he didn't actually receive that letter before he tried to make the second trip. So I think the message I'd like to convey to people is it's highly unlikely that's going to happen to you, that somebody is going to, the federal government officials are going to approach you at an airport and tell and confiscate your passport. Very, very unlikely to happen. That's the only time that I know that it has happened, but Paul might know some stories about it happening to other people. And what is more likely to happen, and this has happened many times, of which I'm personally aware, which is if a registrant who travels overseas, when he comes back, then he gets a certified letter from the State Department telling him that his passport has been revoked because it lacks the unique identifier. So again, I know people are very concerned about they're going to be stuck overseas and not be able to get back to the United States. And I think I've heard one story, and Paul, if you know more about this, maybe you can add to it, about somebody who supposedly got their passport revoked when they're overseas. I'm not even sure about that story. I haven't spoken to that individual. But again, what's more likely to happen is that you successfully go on your overseas trip, and when you come home, you get a certified letter from the U.S. State Department. So you're going to have to sign for it, and that letter notifies you that your passport has been revoked. And then it tells you what to do. You need to surrender your passport, and you need to apply for a new passport. And Larry, I wasn't clear whether or not people are going to ask for questions or
yes,
at any particular point in time.
Yes, we are. I'm trying to get Paul unmuted. Apparently, Andy muted him. I've lost him on the board because we got quite a few here.
Oh, no.
But as soon as we find him, okay. we'll get him unmuted. Andy, you're looking for him. It's a 214 area code.
He's on.
Okay. So, Paul, did you want to add to what Janice has said?
Sure. The incident with the gentleman who's overseas, he went to Italy to meet he's been dating this girl for a while, meet a girl. He'd gone to Italy a couple of previous times to get married. He was in the process of getting residency and to get married and then get residency in Italy. And he got a letter in New York from a neighbor saying that the State Department sent a letter, the basic rude letter, saying that his passport had been revoked. He was frantic, and I talked to him on the phone. I think he also talked to Janice. I'm not sure, but at the end of the day, he had to get his passport overseas. He did get a residency. He explained the situation to the Italian authorities, and they didn't seem too particularly concerned. He established residency, and he got married. And he was able to get his passport. I believe it does have the unique identifier on it. The key there was he was surprised because he wasn't, he was no longer a resident in New York, but I think he was still on the registry. We're getting lots of information that once people come off the registry, then almost immediately they're able to travel without any alert sent and without any hassles coming back through the country. So I know of two people in Texas, a couple other people that have traveled from other states that have been off the registry only 2 months, and they've had problems before, for example, coming back and getting rejected from Mexico. But once they're off the registry, they're good to go. So the system seems to be working, which kind of surprises me. Anyway, that gentleman in Italy is now married. He's going to establish a residency in Italy, and he should be, since he won't be a resident of any state registry, he should be able to get a new passport with without the stamp. So that's the.
Did we lose Janice? Andy, did we lose Janice, or did we lose everybody?
I got disconnected from the conference call. 1 second. Of course, it happened right then.
This service is provided. Access code accepted. Q&A session has started.
As, quote, he was required to register as a sex offender. And what happened is that the Angel Watch Center had taken it upon themselves to interpret Virginia state law.
Unmuted.
And they did it incorrectly. But because they, and so then Angel Watch Center notified the State Department that turned around and notified him at his mother's house, a place he hadn't lived for at least 2.5 years, that his passport had been revoked. And the upshot of this was he was stuck in a foreign country where he'd gone for business for about 6 weeks. And that's how long it took us to untie this knot. But so we were eventually successful. And what we had to do was go to the Virginia State Police, and they're the organization in that state that, you know, that is in charge of their registry, and got a letter from an attorney who works for the Virginia State Police stating that he was not required to register because, just as you said, Paul, he no longer resides in that state. And so, like the gentleman you described who moved to Italy, and this other gentleman who moved, you know, a different direction, but the fact is that it just came springing up. And the good news is that the Angel Watch Center, once I was able to send them the letter from the Virginia State Police back down, but even so, it took an additional week after the Angel Watch Center admitted that they made a mistake for him to get his passport. And so, you know, I know the federal government thinks that 6 weeks is a relatively short amount of time, but most individuals do not. And this man was basically stuck in a hotel for 6 weeks and having to pay, you know, hotel fees for that period of time when he could have been home with his family.
Wow. That could be very expensive.
Yeah.
So, well, we could either go to calls, or you guys, the King, did you, or you guys have any questions of one another, or we've got them stacking up here in the queue.
I have some things I want to update people on. One is, and I'll be sending an email out on this and update the matrix. Kenya looks like it's now definitely out. Someone got turned away from Kenya. What's interesting is they gave all the information 21 days prior. They were going through Frankfurt, no problem, Germany, flew from Frankfurt to Kenya, and they were waiting for when they got the airplane. And the inference that they got in Kenya was that they were being directed to send him back by the U.S. government. Now, what that brings up the situation, I'd be interested to see what Janice has to say. What I'm telling people is to travel, just tell the government where you're going, the itinerary that you know of. When you get to another country, make a new itinerary. Now, I think that's well within law, but what if you make plans, for example, to go to Munich or Frankfurt and take a follow-on flight that same day or the next day, you booked your flight, and you don't tell them about an itinerary that you know of? Because if you look at the Federal Marshal, there's a website, and I'm going to post that on my website. There's a website where this it's called Frequently Asked Questions. It's in one of my blogs. And if you type in frequently FAQ, sex offender, or international baggage law, there's a set of questions that the Marshal Service has answering questions that we would have. So, for example, the 21 days, isn't the 21 days required? They say, yes, it is. And they state as far as what information, and all they say is, give us your, give us the itinerary that you have. And but they also say is everything has to be accurate, so you can't lie. So what I'm telling people is, look, just tell them the country you're going to, and don't lie where you're going, and then you're good to go. And that seems to be the case. People travel because people have been asked, they go to Hong Kong, then they go on someplace else. It's just going to be a stamp in your passport. They've been asked that question. But then they said, well, did you give 21-day knowledge? Yes, I did. And then they let him go on. So I don't know. Jen, do you have an input on gaming the system? What do you think?
Paul, I do. And I think it's dangerous. And so especially, I can think of a couple different scenarios. One is if you already have tickets to go to that second country when you leave the U.S., right. I think that's then, you've committed fraud and that you would be liable that you actually didn't give 21 days notice. And then, it'd be easier for, I'm thinking it would be easier for me as an attorney to defend somebody who, let's just say you go to country A, you meet somebody and hey, let's travel together to country B. And so then you decide once you're in country A to buy a ticket, to go to country B. I think that right. would make, right. Would be more defensible.
That's the thing. On the website, it says, you have to give all the information that of your itinerary. I would assume that means all the information you know. So if you know you're going to Hong Kong and then you're that 4 hours later you have a flight onto Thailand, I would imagine you need to know, you need to tell them. However, if you get to Hong Kong and then you say, well, I think I'm going to book a flight to Thailand, I think that's probably a defensible position. On the other hand, it might be just better to keep everything up board, and if it means you can't go to Thailand, you can't go to Thailand. But once you're living overseas, you can go anywhere you want, and you won't, because there's no jurisdiction for you to give 21 days day notice. And we've seen people who have established residency overseas, they do come off the notification system. There was one gentleman who lived in Thailand for about 10 years, had a business, had a hotel. He flew back to Illinois to take care of some business, and he made the mistake of staying long enough where he had to register. Well, when he flew back, since he was on the registry, they sent a notice to Thailand, and Thailand kicked him out. And he went to Florida. I'm not sure what his current status is. He moved to Illinois, where he doesn't have to register, and now he's going to be able to travel, hopefully, without getting notifications. But he still haven't, as last I talked to him about 4 months ago, he was still trying to get back into Thailand where his wife is, and he has a kid. And actually brought one kid with him that is his child. But anyway, getting complicated. So, Bart, one thing to confirm, two people have traveled through Barbados without a problem. They did get interrogated, kind of 5 minutes, general questions, and then they were told to stay, have a good trip. So it seems to be in the Caribbean, if it's a Dutch country, Dutch protectorate, Aruba, places like that, we're not having any problems. Also, people have been able to travel from the United States into the British Virgin Islands without a problem, and also take a ferry across, I believe, from the American Virgin Islands into the British Isles. I will tell you that if you're in the Virgin Islands and you make a trip over the British Virgin Islands for just one day, you need to give 21-day notice. That is considered an international trip. You can go to the American Virgin Islands without a problem. You don't have to give 21-day notice. You do, though, in the British Virgin Islands within, I think, 4 days. You need to confirm that on the website. You need to register that you're there. But again, as a Puerto Rico, for example, American Samoa and Guam, you do not have to give 21-day notice. You just have to abide by those territories' registration requirements. So that's the latest update. Barbados is good. Kenya is bad. One thing I do want to talk to, and Janice, maybe you can give me your input. The guy who went to Florida, who was traveling to Florida trying to get to the Caribbean, and the Marshals Service showed up at his with a letter, interrogated him, destroyed his vacation, very disturbing. I personally recommend, if you have a good passport, and it's going to be good for the next several years, I would make the State Department come and tell you that you need the unique identifier. One individual did say he wants to make a trip, he's going to go to Europe, he doesn't want to screw it up, so he's confident he can get into Europe even with the stamp. So he said he was going to go ahead and get the new stamp. That's a personal decision. As Janice stated, it's probably going to be rare that someone meets you at the airport from the Marshal Service telling them that your passport's been revoked. Some people have got a letter while they're waiting to take their flight after they've made the 21 days. In that case, be prepared to get. I got my passport renewed once in 3 days, and that was about 6 years ago. So it's possible to get in the short period of time. So I think it's personal preference, but I think if you have a good passport, I would keep that passport. So let me give you some anecdotal information. There are three individuals that have contacted me in the last week who have gotten their brand new passports without a unique identifier. And they have it. And one asked me, should I go back and get the unique identifier? And they say, that's your personal discretion, but I would not, especially since this individual is going to be off the registry in a year. So you might as well just wait it out and travel on that passport. So anyway, do you have any, what's your feeling, Janice, on whether you should go get the unique identifier, just take care of it or not?
You know, I think it's really got to be a case by case decision. And so if somebody's going to be traveling soon and they have a concern about that, they may want to go back and apply for a new passport. But I know of some people who have requested a new passport, applied for a new passport, and they get one that doesn't have a unique identifier on it. So then what do you do? I mean, I don't know that there is on the application form a box to check that says, hey, please add the unique identifier to my passport.
Who would be nutty enough to check that box?
Yeah. Some people are getting insurance, and sometimes the insurance seems to work. I'm afraid someday that the insurance companies find out that we're registrants and then refuse us insurance. But if they cover it for now when you plan your vacations, but then it just jacks up the cost. Hopefully, we'll get the best information we can where people can travel and how they can travel safely. That's the main purpose of the travel matrix. And we can try to limit the damage that happens with this. One thing I do mention, I got an email from I was going to bring my computer up, from a professor at Georgia Tech, who wants to write a book, and he wants to talk with me about some of the damage and some of the effects of international baggage law. So I thought that was interesting. What I'm going to do is go through my matrix or go through the stories I have and try to pick out some individuals and see if I can get authorization to maybe they can sign and not the guy can sign a non-disclosure agreement or something, but we can, I can talk to them and we can publish some of the information that has happened to people's travels.
So Paul, you are breaking up.
So Larry, I'm ready to answer questions.
Yeah, Paul's breaking up a bit.
I'm ready to answer questions.
So Paul, you're breaking up. I'm gonna see if we can improve this. Andy, do you have any idea? We've got six or seven people. One person is in Georgia in detention, so I'm going to ask him quickly, is anything changing? And then there's one from 713 where we're going to carry your question over to the next hour about the internet restrictions. So we see you there, but I'm probably not going to pick you up unless you have an IML question. But 770, Is there anything changed since we last heard a report from you and your detention facility there in Gwinnett County?
No, nothing's changed here in Gwinnett County, but I did want to comment on this international Megan's Law. It's kind of been touched upon and said before, but I did receive a passport recently within the last few months, and it did not have the identifier on it. So I'm kind of wondering, am I allowed to travel with that passport without it having that identifier, or will I run into problems, you know, at the point of entry or point of exit?
Well, I think the quick answer is yes, use it. And you should not have a problem while you're traveling. It may or may not get revoked when you come back. So what the International Megan's Law precisely says with regard to passports is that the Secretary of State may not issue a new passport to somebody who's required to register currently without a unique identifier. That's what it says. And then it says that the Secretary of State may or may not revoke existing passports that lack the unique identifier. So even though I've mentioned that there have been some people who've traveled overseas only to come home and find out their passport has been revoked, that's not 100%. I'm not even sure what the percentage is, because I'm sure Paul and I only hear from the people that have the negative experiences. So, but I do know that there are people who've had positive travel experiences, been able to enter the countries, especially in Europe, the 26 Schengen nations, without a problem, and they have not had a unique identifier on, and they have not had their passport revoked when they returned. So I really, it seems hit or miss, the question about whether or not somebody's passport gets revoked. It almost seems like if somebody tries to enter a country that is, you know, that won't allow them to enter, you're more likely to have your passport revoked and receive that notice when you come home. But that, even that's not 100%. In other words, people who, you know, flown out of the United States only to get to the foreign country and been told you can't enter and then return, you know, sent back to the United States. Some of them have their passports revoked, but not everybody. So yes, and Paul made this advice earlier, and I agree with him, that if you have an existing passport, go ahead and use it until, unless you're told that it's going to be revoked. It, for one thing, folks, even if you don't travel overseas, it's a good form of identification. You know, backup ID. I know here in California, we have that Real ID program coming on as far as our driver's licenses. And I did get mine a few months back. And when I went to get it, the passport was one valid form of identification to prove who I am.
Absolutely.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is passports have other uses other than overseas travel. So yes, go ahead and hold on to it until and unless they tell you they revoked it. But I want everybody to understand clearly who hasn't seen one of these letters. The letter doesn't say we're going to revoke your passport. It says we have revoked your passport. So at that point in time, you won't have a choice if you receive such a letter. But again, know that, you know, it seems pretty hit or miss as far as whose passports are being revoked at this time.
Is there any way that we could get a redacted copy of one of those revocation letters and see it for so? I mean, I know it doesn't change the fact when you get yours when you come back, which you're saying that seems to increase the odds when you travel to a country and once you return. But it'd be nice for people to know that your passport, you should continue using it until you get a letter that looks like this, and it'll come certified, right?
It will come certified. And certainly, I can provide you, Larry, with a copy of a redacted letter, and you can put it up on, I guess, on National RSOL website. I'm trying to remember if we have one on the AXOL website. I'm sorry, I don't recall. But anyway, if you think there's some value in it, we'll redact a letter and send it to you.
It's an issue that we've never lost interest in. We can fill up if we had advertised this as being an IML call, there'd be probably one and a half times as many people as there are here. But it's an issue where we recognize the struggle from the beginning because of, unfortunately, the powers that be that had control of the levers did it in the last minute, and there was some doubt as far as I didn't think the challenge was going to succeed, but we have great admiration for all the work that Axel and you and your team did for this. It was not anything where it should be diminished. I mean, you guys filed two lawsuits.
It was worth a try, Larry. Thank you.
You guys did an amazing job of trying to fight a battle which no federal judge, I don't care if they're liberal or conservative, is going to want to step in the middle of this and undo it. And I think you had kind of a liberal and a not so liberal judge between the two different cases, right? The first one was a fairly liberal judge.
The first one was very conservative.
Okay, I had it backwards. So, okay.
So one of the points I'd like to make about the IML itself is that, okay, there's two major provisions or basic provisions. The first one has to do with notices being sent to foreign countries. And with that provision, the way the law is written is that the federal government has the authority to send out a notice to a foreign country about anybody who has ever been required to register as a sex offender. Not currently. Anybody who has ever been required to register as a sex offender. Now, during the litigation on that first case in Oakland, California, the government attorney argued that, oh, well, yes, we have that authority, but we're not going to use that authority. The only authority we're going to use is to send notices out about people who are currently required to register. But a point that I made during that litigation was two of my seven plaintiffs, that's exactly what happened to them. They were no longer required to register, and yet notices were sent by Angel Watch to the country to which they were traveling. And because of that, those two people were not allowed to enter the countries. And the government attorney's response was, oh, darn, we made a mistake. That was an accident. We won't do that again. And the judge let her get away with it.
Wow.
And that's just one of those things in the back of my mind that I'm very concerned about. So if they have the authority to do something, you know, okay, maybe the current person, at least in 2016, and we're talking about 2 years ago already, that person's interpretation was, oh, we're only going to send out notices about somebody who's currently required to register. But what if somebody new comes around, some new government official, and they interpret it differently and they start sending notices about everybody? And I don't mean to frighten anybody, but it's just this vagueness and this lack of certainty that really has a chilling effect upon everybody who's on the registry and your decision about whether or not to travel overseas. So for most people, an overseas trip is expensive as far as money, and then it takes a lot of time as well. And the horror of spending thousands of dollars to travel to fill in the blank, whatever country it is, only to arrive there sleep deprived and everything else, and then be told that you're not going to be allowed to enter and that you in fact have to take the next flight back to the United States. And that has happened countless times. And I lost track of how many sobbing people I've talked to on the phone who didn't know, because they didn't read either one of our websites, that they're not supposed to go fly to Mexico because they will be turned around, and other countries as well.
So, Janice, do you guys, I think this would be a good time for us to take a pause and do a drawing while we're getting ready to finish out this hour. And I'm ready for a drum roll.
See, you asked for that. I have no way of doing that.
Well, just do it on your desktop. Do a drum roll. All right. So he's shaking up the numbers that are in a little cookie jar. And he's shaking them and shaking them and shaking them. Actually, he's doing it on a computer. He's not actually shaking any jar, but he's going to tell us which contestant number has won the prize.
Contestant number 171. Do you want more information? Do you want like the phone number? Do you want the area code?
Let's see. Contestant number 171. And they're going to have to prove they're here.
Yeah.
And the last four digits. So see if we can spot them on here over their phone number. And if
they might be on YouTube.
If they might be on YouTube, well, then they better text in or somehow to let us know that they're listening.
I got them.
Okay. So what is the last four digits of that phone number?
3023.
And the area code so that I can find them for my notes.
703.
Okay. We're not going to give out your whole phone number. So they've got to do a lot of work to figure out who you are. All right. So we've got a winner to attend the NARSOL conference. And we also have a number of questions in the queue, and we have one that's come in from the stream. So, Andy, would you like to read the question from the stream?
Sure. The question is, I wonder about those like me whose U.S. passports are different because I was born in the United Kingdom, which is stated in my U.S. passport with the date of birth in the U.K. format of day, month, year. It just says U.S. nationality. And then goes on to, oh my God, my screen's just froze. Then it goes on, the Dutch and British Caribbean Island are territories of European countries. In Europe, we care about human rights and we know about the U.S. human rights violations. I'm not surprised that they are okay with allowing registrants to enter. I'm not really sure there's a question in there, but that was just, I guess, more just a comment to be stated.
So, well, I thought there was a question about the difference in the passport. Does anybody know anything about that? I don't.
I don't.
I don't know.
Okay.
I do have a comment on the international.
You broke up.
I just want to comment on national priorities. I think you're going to see some changes. You know, Brazil just has a fairly far-right president who thinks American foreign policy is BS. And I think there might be an inroad. Again, we need to start communicating with some countries. That's going to take a lot of effort. But I think there might be some changes on getting access or being able to enter into some countries that we previously could not based upon the political situation in those countries. So that's just a thought.
Janice, you don't need to send me the letter. One of our fantastic people just sent me a letter of revocation, and I forgot.
Wonderful.
I forgot he had done this, and I failed to file it. I remember it came in some time back. See, when you get old, you just can't remember it. So, but I have it now, and I will file it. So we've got that covered. I know what it looks like. Okay, well, we've got all these callers waiting, so let's try to clear as many as we can. The one from 713, we had put you on hold, and if it turns out when I get to you, I'm going to take you now, but if it's not related to IML, we're going to bring you back in the final hour. Area code 713, is this related to international Megan's Law?
It is.
All right, well, let's hear it.
I have a question. My son's ex-wife lives in the UK, and they have a son that he actually has never seen yet because he can't travel internationally. He's still on supervised release. He is going to request the court to let him go. He does have a passport that does not have the identifier, but he is going to travel to Spain. She's going to meet him there so that he can see his child and they can spend some time together. I believe Spain's okay, but I'm just wondering if anyone has had any issue or if anyone knows of anyone that's traveled internationally while on supervised release.
I know of a guy who went to China, got permission to go to China. His wife had family there and he was on supervised release. But that was before international Megan's Law. If you're on supervised release, it's apples and oranges. It's really up to whatever the probation parole system will allow, and they really don't overlap that much. I did hear of one probation office, I think in Pennsylvania, that was requiring those who had passports to get the unique identifier for those people who are on parole and probation, and a couple of individuals were going to sue over that. I don't know where they're at with that, but I mean, maybe Janice can comment on that. I don't see how probation could force you to get the unique identifier unless, since you're on supervised release, you have to do what they say. I'm not sure.
I think that's a very fertile issue, and I have no idea how a judge will come down on it. But I commend the caller, you know, and your son for having found a creative way to do it. And so for those who don't already know, the United Kingdom is off limits to registrants, but Spain is one of 26 countries in Europe that allows registrants to come visit.
Spain is no problem. No. You might want to consider in the future, people have gotten into England, even telling the Marshal Service by going by ferry, fly into Netherlands and take the ferry across. That is a possibility. And also, some people have been able to enter the UK with the help of a UK immigration lawyer. So that's two things that I might want to consider.
His ex-wife actually has said she can file something in the UK so that he can actually come in eventually when he's actually off supervised release. We're going to try that. But right now, we just want to see if he can get to Spain. And his probation officer, he travels a lot across the U.S. He's just not traveled internationally. And in order to travel internationally, we have to actually ask the judge. So we're going to see how that goes.
And keep us posted.
There's an IML for him. But you should be able to do it.
Yeah, keep us posted on that because it'll be helpful for others. And we're going to bring you back in the next hour as well. So, all right.
No problem.
Thank you. We've got a stack of people, so we're going to try to speed them up because we're going to have a hard break in at 5 minutes before the hour. And I see six people here in the queue. So let's see if we can expedite these calls. 850, you're on the Halloween Marathon with Janice Luton and Paul.
Hi, this is Joseph Pratt in Tallahassee, Florida. I'm actually involved with Florida Action Committee. I'm a registered citizen in Florida. Kind of a question for Mr. Alexander, because I remember a few months ago, I haven't been on a Narsil call until tonight, that he submitted some litigation on internet entrapment to the Louisiana Supreme Court. But I guess if you can answer my question.
Yeah, we're going to get that in the next hour. He's going to have a whole hour. We're going to talk about internet restrictions. And we're going to talk about a Third Circuit case. So can we deal with that in the next hour?
All right. Gotcha. But he was fighting litigation for a sting operation. But I'll ask him that later too. If we can talk about that, so
we can do that. All right. Then I'll put you back in yes, mute, sir. And we'll move to the next call. Area code 734. You are on the Halloween Marathon with Janice Lucci and Paul Rigney.
Yes. Hello. I have a question in regards to if there's conflicts with state law notifications, like here in Michigan, it's a 7-day notice that you have to give as opposed to a 21-day, and the clarification they got on that is you follow the rules that are in your particular state as far as travel. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know what the laws are in the state of Michigan, but okay. This would be my concern if you were my client and if I were your lawyer, and neither one of those is true. I would tell you to go ahead and give 21 days notice. And the reason I would do that is because that's the conservative thing to do. And the fact is that if you guess incorrectly, you could face up to 10 years in federal prison. So even in California, where there's no requirement that people notify who are not on paper. So somebody who's not on parole and somebody who's not on probation, there is no requirement to notify local law enforcement that you're leaving the country to travel. But I still recommend that people in California do provide such notification because we don't know how this federal law is going to be applied. Federal law, no. Not SORNA.
My concern with that, if you don't mind me saying so, yeah. Is that they don't provide you with any documentation since they don't have a procedure in place to be notified. They're not going to provide you anything to say that they have been notified. So
okay, but
they're going to say, okay, you're all set.
Yeah, but this is what I recommend to other people in California who are my clients, but it's a general recommendation and would apply to other states as well, is you go to local law enforcement and you take them your itinerary, okay? And you take them a copy of your itinerary and you have them date time stamp it. You have somebody sign it that it has been received. And then you make sure you have a second copy of that you take with you. because that is your get out of jail free card right there. And later on, if the federal government decides that they want to prosecute someone and they start looking, you will literally have a get out of jail free card. I gave my local law enforcement notice to, you know, at least 21 days. By the way, I just usually roll it up to 30 anyway. Most people know, not everybody, but most people know well in advance that they're going to make an overseas trip. And why have an argument about what 21 days mean? Is it calendar days? Is it business days? You know, some people can't count, but make some effort to notify local law enforcement, even if they say they don't know what to do with it, at least make an attempt and then keep a copy of the document, some like a receipt that it's been received. So I could go on and on about that, but I won't because we have more callers. But my advice right to you is do 21 days notice.
Okay, but if you're going, see, I live 15 minutes away from Canada. Obviously, I'm not going to have an itinerary to go there. And let's just assume I'm legal to travel to there. How would I handle something like that where there isn't an itinerary and an airplane flight and a hotel stay and all that fancy stuff, and I'm just going over there to have lunch and come back?
You mean like you're just driving across the border?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know the answer to your question. I'm surprised Canada lets you in. I mean, the report that we've been getting is that Canada doesn't let anybody in who's been committed of any felony, including a sex
crime. Well, let's make the assumption that not all registrants have been convicted of a crime. So, if you have like you're a youthful offender, or you've had some sort of a diversionary program, you know, Canada does allow for that.
Well, do you have, just like curiosity, do you have an HYTA or do you have a set aside in Michigan?
Yes.
Okay. So I
am an HYTA.
Okay. Well, that would explain why.
That being a,
I really,
I'm just, I understand.
Yeah. But this really means a lot to me because what you've just given me as an answer to, it really troubled us about the event in Canada, where we sent a delegation. We had people who were willing to go, and we didn't know whether they'd get in or not. And now you've just answered my question, because now I know that you can get in with HYTA, and we were worried about that. So that's very helpful for me to know.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I just went local, it's keeping a fine subject is just local crossings where there isn't an itinerary. Do we just... And I just don't know what to do.
Well, Ms. Bellucci recommends being on the conservative side, but I see your dilemma.
Okay. So, all right. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
I got a quick input. There's a gentleman from Michigan who was able to get a letter of rehabilitation to enter Canada on a regular basis. When IML hit, he was interrogated to come back across quite extensively, but he still got a letter of rehabilitation. He's now able to go enter Canada whenever he wants.
So, all right. Well, we've got more people, so let's go on. And I don't have a phone number, but I have a name here. It says Mark. So you're on the Halloween Marathon with Janice Bellucci and Paul Regan.
Hello.
Hello, Mark. What's your question, sir?
Okay, my question is this. I just recently came off the registry in Pennsylvania.
Can you mute your radio, please, Mark?
Yeah, we're gonna come back to you. We're gonna come back to you in just a second because kind of feedback. So please don't. I mean, I know what happens just like on a regular radio. When they go live, they're listening, and there's a delay in what he's hearing, and he's hearing where. So turn down your volume if you're listening on live stream when we're taking your call, and I'll get right back to you. We're gonna go back to New England and see how things are in the harbor.
So hello again. So quick question for Janice. Janice, it's nice to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
So I was, in terms of the IML, I was wondering if there's, and I don't know how exactly this is done, but if you have parentage going back to some of the European countries, you can actually file and get passports in some of those countries. Is that an option or an idea that people on the registry should can look at?
I think it would be a great idea to do that. And I know we had even one of our board members who was able to claim ancestry in one of the Shingen nations. He did so, and then he left the country. So, but getting a passport was one of the steps. So, yes, my understanding is that you can travel with that passport, and then things are different.
Yeah. Oh, good. I just thought of that the other day, and I wondered if that would work.
So is that it? Is
Thank
that
you.
It, Richard? All right. Thanks, Richard.
Yeah. Thanks.
See you next hour.
Yeah.
All right, and now I have lost Mark, so please do the *6, and because he's vanished into the crowd here when I put him back on mute. So we're going to take another call, and there he is. So, Mark, we're going to try you again. You're on with Janice and Paul. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. I forgot to tell my wife to turn down her phone. She was listening on that, and we're in the same room. I just came off of the registry last month. I live in Pennsylvania, so I was one of the fortunate few. How does that affect getting a passport?
Well, if you're not currently required to register, you should be able to get a passport without a unique identifier on it. So, I mean, people on the registry can get passports. The only question is whether or not it's going to have a unique identifier. And again, IML says that the Secretary of State must add a unique identifier to anybody's passport if they're currently required to register and their offense involved a minor. So if you're not currently required to register, you can get a passport without a unique identifier.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
One other question. Since I know that Canada and UK and some of the other countries, and Mexico even, does not allow sex offenders in the country, would that apply to people like me?
Well, earlier in this conversation, I mentioned the fact that the federal government has the authority to send a notice about anybody who has been convicted of a sex offense involving a minor. The federal government attorney in our case said, but even though they have that authority, they're not exercising that authority, and that they're only sending notices, the Angel Watch Center is only sending notices about people who are currently required to register. So if you try to go to a country and the Angel Watch Center sends a notice about you, please contact me immediately because we'll have a lawsuit.
Okay. Well, so like I said, I live in Pennsylvania, and Canada is only 8 hours away from me. So if I wanted to go to Niagara Falls or something like that, I would have that issue. I didn't want to run into a problem.
So, one thing I might suggest, though, is that you give it a little bit more time. My concern is how quickly or how slowly the federal government acts. And so how long does it take them to clean up their paperwork? I don't know. And I've told people to wait, 2 or 3 months before they try to travel after they are no longer required to register. Just to be
okay. Well, one other thing is I have, ever since the union's decision, we lost, failed to get certified by the Supreme Court. I have not been on the website, and I officially got my letter last month on the 29th.
Congratulations.
So I don't know what date would that would apply there.
You mean you've no longer been required to register as a sex offender since then?
Well, my all my information as basically since the when was it? February 14th, to be exact, was on it disappeared from the website. It hasn't been there. Search my name, and it's not there. I did not receive a letter from the Pennsylvania State Police saying I was no longer required to register until the 29th of September, because they hadn't done my review yet. Because they had misclassified me. When Snora passed, they put me at lifetime, made me a tier 3. And then February of last year, last year, 2017, I get a letter from him saying my status was changed from a tier 3 to a tier 2 because the one offense I had was a 25-year registration, and the other one was only a 15 under the Sonora, but my original registration was for 10. And I was at 10 years last year.
Okay, so I'm gonna stop you there because I know Larry said at the beginning of this hour that we weren't going to talk about people's very specific situations. But I will just say for anybody, because this is being recorded and other people are going to be listening later as well, which is if you get off the registry, if you in fact are that fortunate for whatever reason, then give it some time, at least a couple of months before you try to travel overseas, just in case to be safe, because it's your time and it's your money that you're wasting if you get stopped.
Thank you, Janice. Now, you're welcome to come back on the flip side when we come back from break, and we'll take a couple more questions that were in the queue we didn't get to. If you don't have time, we'll schedule you back another time. Do you want to come on after the 5-minute break?
No, I'm just not available, Larry. I have a prior commitment.
Okay, thank you so much. We're so glad to have you. We're going to be back after the break, and we're going to do one final hour. You are listening to NARSL Halloween Marathon.
Did you know that NARSL has podcasts?
Say what?
Yup, it's true. Just search your podcast app for NARSL and subscribe. You will automatically download the latest episodes of NARSL in Action, or Can They Do That, as soon as they are released. Or just take it old school and visit narsl.org/podcast.
NARSL is actively involved in several pending lawsuits throughout the United States. In Rhode Island, NARSL continues to support an action by the American Civil Liberties Union challenging a state law that would remove certain registered citizens from their homes. In North Carolina, NARSL has a pending ex post facto challenge in federal court against changes and additions to the basic registration requirement that the state has made since 2005. NARSL has filed an amicus brief in a very important burden-shifting case out of Arizona and is soon to file another amicus brief in an Eighth Amendment challenge from Colorado that is currently before the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals. Do you want to support this and other important litigation? Join NARSL today. Let's work together to bring an end to sex offender registries.
People believe that the risk of recidivism of sex offenders, this class that they haven't bothered to think about, is frightening and high. And you heard the lecture about how this is absolute and utter nonsense, right? It literally comes from a Psychology Today article written in the 80s by some guy who was trying to get a grant to treat sex offenders because his premise was their recidivism is frightening and high, but he could give them a treatment program that would make it not frightening and not high, and so give me a lot of money, and whoops, sorry about that, I accidentally set off 30 years of bad jurisprudence. My bad.
It started with Doe versus Poritz, the Megan Kanka, New Jersey Supreme Court. Court after court after court has continued that. Have the courts delved into the research themselves? No. Have the courts looked at the empirical research? No. Because it's easier. Soundbite legislation is so much easier just to carry with it this notion of the risk of recidivism being frightening and high. So what are the numbers? So the group that needs and wants to keep registry, they keep talking about how it's frightening and high, but the true social scientists in the field say that is a lie. And I'm going to use the word lie. It is a lie. It is absolutely not true.
Please keep in mind, responses provided on the program are merely intended to offer guidance and should not be construed as legal advice. We cannot cover the specifics of any individual situation sufficiently to know what the most prudent course of action is. So NARSL advises all participants to consult with an attorney in their jurisdiction to determine the best course of action.